This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from the front page of the Military Times, dated April 16th, 2025. Students sue Defense Department over book bans in military schools. The American Civil Liberties Union, along with a group of military students and family members, sued the Defense Department on Tuesday over book bans and curriculum changes instituted in recent weeks to comply with President Donald Trump's efforts to root out diversity and equity programs within federal agencies. The lawsuit filed in federal court in Eastern District of Virginia states that moves by Department of Defense education activity leaders have unnecessarily harmed learning opportunities for students. The case involves 12 students from six families who attend military-run schools in Virginia, Kentucky, Italy, and Japan. Learning is a sacred and foundational right that is now being limited for students in DODEA schools, said Natalie Tully, one of the plaintiff parents in the lawsuit. The implementation of these executive orders without any due process or parental or professional input is a violation of our children's rights to access information that prevents them from learning about their own histories, bodies, and identities. Since January, the department's school systems, which encompasses 161 schools across 11 countries, including multiple sites in the United States, has begun removing books and changing classroom curricula related to gender ideology or divisive equity ideology. Officials from the ACLU said that has included banning some texts about slavery, Native American history, LGBTQ plus history, and sexual harassment prevention. These schools are some of the most diverse and high-achieving in a nation, making it particularly insulting to strip their shelves of diverse books and erase women, LGBTQ people, and people of color from the curriculum to serve a political goal, said Emerson Sykes, senior staff attorney with the ACLU, in a statement. Our clients deserve better, and the First Amendment demands it. Defense Department officials have not yet publicly commented on the lawsuit. Leaders have defended similar moves, such as banning cultural awareness months, eliminating diversity and inclusion offices, as necessary to remove distractions and political ideology from military operations. The lawsuit asks for a full revocation of the administration's executive orders and reinstatement of all books, classroom materials, and course guidelines to Defense Department schools. The government can't scrub references to race and gender from public school libraries and classrooms just because the Trump administration doesn't like certain viewpoints on those topics, said Matt Callahan, senior supervisor attorney at the ACLU of Virginia. Last week, hundreds of students at DODEA schools staged walkouts over the controversial changes. Department leaders are still considering disciplinary action against individuals involved in those protests. And in our next article, Navy petty officer awarded for showdown with Somali pirates, dated April 16, 2025. It was hard to miss boatswain's mate, First Class Ahmed El Haroun, among the throngs of uniformed sailors shuttling between sessions at the Surface Navy's Association's annual conference near Washington. Over his enlisted crackerjack dress blues, El Haroun wore an elaborately knotted white boatswain's mate lanyard, a traditional decoration he made himself over the course of his first deployment to the Middle East aboard the Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer Mason. One launched shortly after the October 2023 Hamas attack on Israel unleashed chaos on the region. El Haroun, 38, received one of the association's Surface Warfare Operational Excellence Award for his gutsy role in responding to a Somali pirate attack on a commercial tanker in the Gulf of Aden. While Mason's intervention in a tanker's attempted seizure and capture of the five pirates made headlines at the time, El Haroun's role in the rescue, one informed by his Egyptian heritage and knowledge of the pirates' language and Middle Eastern culture, has never before been made public. Now stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, El Haroun recently spoke with Military Times about the incident, during which he became the Navy's primary contact point with the pirates and showed, as his award citation put it, unparalleled courage and leadership under fire in helping to capture the pirates and secure the release of 22 hostages on board the tanker. El Haroun, who grew up in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, traveled to the U.S. as an adult with his wife, an American Navy veteran. When their first child, born in 2016, was treated by Navy doctors at Balboa Naval Medical Center in San Diego for a life-threatening respiratory infection, El Haroun was deeply moved. "After that, I wanted to do something back," El Haroun said. "I wanted to say thank you for the country, for everything they did for me and for my family." When his wife suggested that he join the Navy, he was uncertain at first. "And I said, what? Come on," he recalled. "I just came from Egypt, like they're not going to accept me." But the idea took hold, and he decided to go for it. Though El Haroun had, he said, earned multiple degrees in Egypt, he wasn't yet a U.S. citizen. So he pursued an enlisted path in the Navy. Sure, from the start, he wanted to be a boatswain's mate, a workhorse rating that required physical acumen and expertise in seamanship. "I love to work my hands. I love to build a team," he recalled. "That was exactly what I want." As El Haroun and his crew members trained in Mason's home station of Mayport, Florida, news broke of the October 7, 2023 Hamas terror attacks, in which nearly 1,200 people, most civilians, were killed and approximately 250 more taken hostage. The ship sailed that same month in what would end up being a 263-day deployment in and around the Red Sea. El Haroun said he knew things might get sporty, and as one of the older sailors of his rank in the crew, he took it upon himself to prepare for the worst. "I talked to my chain of command. I will order a lot of repair parts before deployment and keep them with me. And if something happens, I will actually repair it immediately instead of waiting for the part to arrive," he recalled. During the deployment, he said Mason's crew was able to complete all repairs within 24 hours. Then came November 24, 2023, the day the pirates attempted to hijack the chemical tanker MV Central Park in the Gulf of Aden. Mason was undergoing a multi-day replenishment mission near Djibouti when the ship's skipper, Commander Justin Smith, was informed about the attack. The crew wasn't immediately briefed on the situation, but the ship set course for the tanker's location, cruising nearly at full speed, around 29 knots, or 33 miles per hour, El Haroun recalled. As the ship covered the distance, the boatswain's mate got a call from his compartment head asking if he spoke Arabic. El Haroun answered that he spoke every dialect of the language and had served as the command's translator. Immediately, he was shifted to a new role in Mason's visit, Board Search and Seizure, VBSS team, one that ensured he'd be in direct confrontation with the pirates. As the ships neared the tanker, El Haroun was given a megaphone. He saw the Somali pirates in a small wooden boat and delivered the commands in Arabic. "You're hearing the U.S. Navy," he said. "Stop your engines. Stand by for further instruction." The pirates ignored the order and continued attempting to board the tanker, El Haroun said. Despite carrying no weapon, El Haroun suspected the pirates, who he believed to be armed, which respond to a show of bravado rather than diplomacy. "In the Middle East, if you're aggressive, if you put them in the subordinate position, they will listen to you," he said. Approaching the pirate's vessel on board, one of Mason's rigid-hulled inflatable boats, RHIBs, El Haroun said he kept going on the megaphone, positioning himself at the front of the small boat and yelling at the pirates to keep them disoriented and off balance. He put himself between the pirates and the rest of his crew members. He said to force them to have to interact with him. Once the wooden boat had been cleared of the weapons and the pirates had been apprehended, El Haroun said they looked decidedly less menacing. Two, he said, were in their teens or early 20s, one in his mid-20s, and two were in their 40s or 50s. Though the pirates had reason to be more afraid of the VBSS team than the sailors were of them, El Haroun said his first concern remained keeping the Mason's crew safe. When the captured pirates boarded Mason, he had them face out to sea, ensuring they'd be unable to make eye contact with any crew members. Ultimately, El Haroun said they were in confinement on Mason for 30 days before U.S. Marines took them to Djibouti for eventual return to Somalia. He continued to act as their translator for communication and interrogation the entire time. During the rescue, El Haroun and his teammates also had a close encounter with another threat that was ever-present part of their deployment, incoming missiles, likely fired by Houthi rebels in Yemen. with the RHIB transporting pirates back to the ship. He said, incoming missiles added an also almost surreal intensity. In his everyday role as boatswain's mate, El Haroun said, he tried to keep sailors who were losing sleep over the regular missile attacks on the ship. A good day's work apprehending pirates, meanwhile, provided an exclamation point to an intense deployment in the Red Sea. It was a great experience, he said. I feel me and my team played a big role in saving a whole tanker and a whole crew. It feels like an honor. I'm proud of what me and my team actually did. With what he aims to be many years of military career ahead of him, El Haroun said he's hoping to become an intelligence officer, putting his Arabic skills and prior experience to work for the Navy. And in our next article, families sue over appalling conditions in Florida military housing, dated April 16, 2025. Dozens of families are suing Balfour Beatty communities, alleging toxic living conditions and accusing the company of shoddy maintenance practices and corporate indifference or ineptitude, as its privatized military housing community at Naval Air Station Keefe, West Florida. 44 of the 56 families in the complaint are military families. The remaining plaintiffs, civilian families, have been permitted to live in the community when the space was available. Many children are among the 192 current and former residents named in the lawsuit, which was filed in state court in Monroe County, Florida, on March 27th. Families reported issues such as collapsing ceilings because of water damage, mold, insect infestation, structural defects, HVAC and plumbing issues, electrical problems, and the presence of lead paint and asbestos, according to the lawsuit. Balfour Beatty leases and manages more than 43,000 homes across 55 Army, Navy, and Air Force installations, including 700 housing units at NAS Key West. Balfour concealed the horrific conditions from unsuspecting servicemen and women and their families, the 175-page complaint alleges. When these conditions were discovered and reported, Balfour systematically failed to properly repair and remediate significant problems in the homes, the plaintiffs claim, and Balfour misled the families into believing the repairs were made, knowing that families living in the homes would likely suffer serious health problems as a result of the conditions. The lawsuit alleges the families suffered from severe physical, emotional, and financial harm because of the condition of the houses and Balfour's actions. We are aware of the complaint and intend to defend ourselves vigorously, Balfour Beatty communities officials said in an email statement to Military Times. The families allege they've experienced exposure-related medical problems as a result of the housing conditions, such as asthma and other respiratory issues, sinusitis, migraines, memory loss, brain fog, blurred vision, compromised immune systems, and rashes. Some of the families stated that when they would leave the house for a time, their symptoms would disappear, but would again start again when they returned to the house. The families accused Balfour Beatty of gross negligence, fraud, breach of contract, negligent infliction of emotional distress, and a breach of warranty of habitability. They asked for an unspecified amount of compensatory damages and punitive damages. Plaintiff Virginia Guess said her children developed persistent respiratory issues and other health problems within months of moving into their home as NAS Key West in June 2022. They developed the 6B cough, a label used by neighbors and teachers to describe a cough in children who lived in Key West's military housing. The 6B Park housing includes more than 500 townhouse units, many of which were built between 1962 and 1965, according to the complaint. Guess, a construction manager who started working for Balfour Beatty in August 2023 as a service center coordinator, quickly recognized alarming patterns of negligence in housing maintenance, according to the lawsuit. It hit home when the Guess ceiling started to crack in February 2024, but Balfour Beatty delayed needed repairs, the complaint alleges, and by June of that year, there was water intrusion and mold growth. An independent moisture reading inspection found severe mold contamination. Yet, Balfour management attempted to shift blame, attributing the mold to dog hair and excessive pasta boiling, the lawsuit states. Other family members who worked for Balfour Beatty alleged they witnessed company employees engaging in fraudulent and deceptive practices. Plaintiff Lyric Seaton alleges employees were instructed to lie to Navy housing inspectors, block physical damage, and to select only perfect files for audits. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat of Florida, asked Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy, James Honia, about some of the allegations against Balfour Beatty during a congressional hearing on the service members' quality of life challenges on April 8th. The lawsuit even claims that Balfour Beatty officials blocked Navy personnel from inspecting houses in some cases, Wasserman Schultz said. Honia said he didn't have information about specific allegations. I do know that both the installation commander and their teams did go through all the housing down there at Key West, Honia said, noting that Naval Installations Command officials inspected some of the homes. We did a full inventory of all those homes and determined a certain portion of them were uninhabitable. Balfour Beatty paid for those members to be moved and placed in other homes or temporary housing as necessary. Mold infestation was a common complaint among the families. Sections of the McCarthy's family garage ceiling collapsed on two occasions in 2023 and 2024, revealing mold, water damage, decaying trusses, and extensive termite tunnels. When the military family moved to temporary housing in May 2024, they woke up in the middle of their first night covered in bugs, according to the complaint. So they returned to the original house, where 5 months later, water began pouring from the kitchen's light fixtures, saturating the ceiling, dripping down walls, and seeping through cabinets. When Balfour maintenance looked at the kitchen's condition, they claimed everything looked normal, the suit alleges. The Balfour report notes that the mold looks good, the lawsuit states. Many of the families in the lawsuit said they had no choice but to stay in dangerous conditions. The Moody family moved out in October 24 after 2 years, paying more than $5,000 in moving expenses. The active duty family said they experienced water leaks in the roof, ceiling, walls, and electrical outlets, and persistent mold infestation. They say their infant son suffered persistent health problems. His mother fears exposure to mold and other hazards during his early development might lead to lung problems or other complications later in life, according to the complaint. The guilt that she had no choice but to bring her newborn home to a dangerous and hazardous house is overwhelming, the lawsuit states. Balfour Beatty has previously come under scrutiny for subpar living conditions in military housing. The company pleaded guilty in 2021 to committing fraud against the U.S. and was ordered to pay $65 million in fines and restitution for misconduct relating to its military housing practices and federal contracts. The company also agreed to pay $35 million to resolve a False Claims Act civil suit brought by the government. And in our next article, House Vets Chairman backs VA staffing cuts but promises oversight, dated April 16, 2025. House Veterans Affairs Chairman Mike Bose doesn't know what the full impact of cutting tens of thousands of federal workers from Veteran Affairs payrolls will be, but he is confident it won't cripple the department. The amount of people who have been let go so far is minimal, the Republican congressman from Illinois said during a recent sit-down with Military Times. I trust VA Secretary Doug Collins when he has said that no one is going to lose their benefits. We're going to provide good quality care. What we're doing is we're realigning VA so that it can be done correctly. It can be done efficiently and in the best way for the veteran. Veterans Affairs leaders have announced plans to trim up to 80,000 staffers from the department's workforce as part of broader efforts by President Donald Trump's administration to reduce the size of the federal bureaucracy. As department officials spar with congressional Democrats over their looming staff reduction, Bose's role as chairman of the House's primary Veterans Policy Committee sits squarely in the middle of the conflict. He has accused his Democratic colleagues of fear tactics for their insistence that cuts that scope will take away veterans' benefits and services, but he has also promised close scrutiny of plans from Collins and VA leaders to ensure that those predictions don't come true. I trust Secretary Collins, but that doesn't stop me from being the chairman that has oversight over the issue, Bose said. We will continue to do that. I have made the commitment to veterans around this nation that the services they receive are going to be quality services, hopefully better services, and hopefully done more efficiently. Remember this, veterans are not just veterans, they're also taxpayers. Similar to Collins' public statements, Bose said he believes the Department of Veterans Affairs is in need of fundamental changes after years of unchecked increases, both in terms of spending authority and employee hiring. Unfortunately, we've had an overgrowth of bureaucracy, he said. We do want change. We want to make it better. We want to make it better for the veteran. We want to make it so that money that we spend is spent wisely to provide for the veteran, not just to grow bureaucracy. About 480,000 federal employees currently work within the department, the majority in VA hospitals and medical centers spread throughout the country. That total is up about 20% from when Trump left office in 2020. The workforce grew after years of increased pressures on VA operations, including a massive expansion of military tax exposure benefits in 2022 that has led to record high disability benefit applications and increases in medical visits. Bose is pushing for the increased access to community care appointments to help with that surge, a move that has prompted additional criticism from congressional Democrats for potentially taking away responsibilities and resources from the VA. But he'll have to oversee hearings later this spring on the staffing cuts, a showdown that he's likely to inject even more political fights into the issue of veterans care. The question is that money being spent wisely, Bose said. We're going to do everything we can to make sure it's spent the way it's supposed to be. In our next article, Fort Benning returns to old name with a new namesake, dated April 16th, 2025. In Fort Benning, the Army officially restored the name Fort Benning to its storied training post in Georgia, only this time to honor an 18-year-old corporal who fought in World War I rather than a Confederate general. A ceremony to make the name change official was held Wednesday at the base just outside Columbus. Roughly 70,000 soldiers, civilian workers, and military family members are stationed at Fort Benning, which trains infantry troops and tank crews and is home to the elite Army Ranger School. It's the second time in less than 2 years that Fort Benning commanders have been tasked with swapping out the post's name on everything from signs marking gates, streets, police cars, and buildings to official stationery and websites. That will cost around $653,000, according to Fort Benning officials. The last name change in 2023 redesignated the post as Fort Moore as part of a move started by Congress in 2020 and completed during President Joe Biden's administration to remove names that honor Confederate leaders, including from nine Army posts. The name of Henry L. Benning, a former Georgia Supreme Court justice who vocally supported secession and served as a Confederate Brigadier General in the Civil War, had adorned the base since it opened as Camp Benning in 1918. Federal law now prohibits naming military bases for Confederates. The Pentagon, under President Donald Trump, had found a workaround for reverting bases back to what they were formerly called by finding new soldiers to honor with the same last name. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said last month, ordered the change back to Fort Benning to honor Fred Benning, who was awarded the nation's second highest honor for battlefield bravery as an 18-year-old corporal in 1918, and later was promoted to sergeant, a fact uncovered after Hegseth issued the memo. Sue Conger Williams, Benning's granddaughter, recalled summers in Nebraska fishing with her grandfather and digging for earthworms while he watched for cars, but she said she never learned much about his time in the Army. I am grateful for this glimpse into history, and I see some similarities between Fred Benning, the soldier, and Fred Benning, my grandpa, Conger Williams said. These are integrity, hard work, and commitment to service. Fred Benning received his Distinguished Service Cross after returning home to Nebraska, where he started a bakery and served as mayor of the small town of Nalai. He died in 1974. Conger Williams sat up front at the ceremony with Benning's great-granddaughter and Timothy's great-great-granddaughter as soldiers, veterans, and locals milled around behind them. Major General Colin Tully, the fort's commanding general, said people at Fort Benning knew little about Fred Benning, which sent historians poring over old records to piece together his legacy. During Wednesday's ceremony, Tully noted that Benning took charge of his machine gun platoon in October 1918 in France, leading 20 survivors through heavy fire after the commander was killed. What sets him apart was his unwavering dedication to his soldiers. His understanding of the soldiers' needs, said Tully. During its short time as Fort Moore, the Georgia Post became the first in the Army named for a couple, the late General Hal Moore and his wife Julia Moore. Hal Moore served in Vietnam as commander of a cavalry battalion based at Fort Benning and was also a Distinguished Service Cross recipient. Julia Moore successfully lobbied the Pentagon to adopt a policy that military families would be notified of war casualties in person rather than by telegram. Whatever a name may be on an installation aboard, the Moors are an interwoven part of this installation and will never go away, said Tooley. In his March 3rd memo ordering the return of the name Fort Benning, Hegseth directed the Army to find a new way to honor the Moors in a manner that celebrates their significant contributions to the local community and the Army. The Army hasn't said how much the switchback to Fort Benning will cost. An Army commission in 2022 estimated the change to Fort Moore would cost at least $4.9 million. Fort Benning is the second U.S. military base to have its 2023 name change reversed. The nation's largest Army installation was rechristened Fort Bragg in North Carolina last month, following a brief 2 years as Fort Liberty. And in case you're just now joining us, you are listening to Military Times. And in our next article, Trump signs shipbuilding order as Navy leaders call for 381 ship fleet, dated April 14, 2025. President Donald Trump on April 9th signed an executive order aimed at revitalizing an American shipbuilding industry that has fallen well behind production levels as it rivals from the People's Republic of China. Language in the executive order, which cites the need to strengthen a commercial shipbuilding capacity and maritime workforce, mirrors many concerns expressed among the industry's defense counterparts. In an April 8th hearing of Navy leadership before the Senate Armed Services Subcommittee on Sea Power, service officials voiced concerns regarding stagnant shipbuilding and what that could mean for success in great power conflicts. Navy officials in March 2024 stated the service's goal of growing its fleet of battle-force ships to 381 over the next 30 years, a plan that would require investing at least $40 billion each year over the duration of the effort, according to the Congressional Budget Office. There are currently fewer than 300 battle-force ships in the fleet, and that number is expected to drop. Current projections indicate the Navy will retire close to a dozen more ships through 2027 than expects the commission. In a policy statement in February, officials from the nonprofit Navy League echoed the need to expand the service's fleet while calling on Congress to increase funding for public shipyards and Coast Guard icebreakers. An estimated 250,000 skilled or well-compensated workers must be hired over the next decade to accomplish shipbuilding and vessel maintenance goals, according to Matthew Sermon, the direct reporting program manager for the Navy's Maritime Industrial Base Program. Well, I think that's all the time we have for now. I thank you for listening to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.